The Minster erupted from the planed-off stump of what had once been the end of a mountain range. The crag of the Millenarian Math loomed above it on the east. The other maths and compounds were spread below it on the south and west. The one where I lived with the other tenors was a quarter of a mile away. A roofed gallery, consisting of 7 staircases strung together by landings, connected our math to a stone patio spread below the portal that we used to get into the Minster. This was the route being taken by most of my fellow tenors. Rather than wait for that clot of old sores to clear the bottleneck, though, I doubled back into the chapter house, which was really just a wide spot in the gallery that surrounded the cloister. This had a back exit that got me into a covered alley between chalk halls and workshops. Its walls were lined with niches where we stuffed work in progress. Ends and corners of half-written manuscripts projected, slowly yellowing and curling, making the passage seem even narrower than it was. Jogging to its end and ducking through a keyhole arch, I came out into a meadow that spread below the elevated plinth on which the Minster was built and that served as a buffer separating us from the math of the centenarians. A stone wall 16 feet high sliced it in half. The hundreders used their side for raising livestock. When I had been collected, we had used our side as a haymow. A few years ago, in late summer, Fra Leo and Fra Jesri had been sent out with hoes to walk it, looking for plants of the 11. Finding something that looked like blithe, they had chopped it out, piled it in the middle of the meadow, and set fire to it. By day's end, the entire meadow on our side of the wall had become an expanse of smoking, carbonized stubble, and noises coming over the top of the wall suggested that sparks had blown onto the hundreder's side. On our side, along the border between the meadow and the tangles where we grew most of our food, the Fras and Soors had formed a battle line that ran all the way down to the river. We passed full buckets up the line and empty ones down it, and threw the water onto those tangles that seemed most likely to burst into flames. If you've ever seen a well-tended tangle in the late summer, you'll know why. The amount of biomass is huge, and by that time of the year, it's dry enough to burn. At the Inquisition, the deputy warden regulant, who had been on duty at the time, had testified that the initial fire had produced so much smoke that he'd been unable to get a clear picture of what Leo and Jesri had done. So the whole thing had been chronicled as an accident, and the boys had got off with penance. But I know, because Jesri told me later, that when the fire in the blithe had first spread to the surrounding grass, Leo, instead of stamping it out, had proposed that they fight fire with fire and control it using fire vlore. Their attempt to set counterfires had only made matters worse. Jesri had dragged Leo to safety as he was attempting to set a counterfire to contain a system of counterfires that was supposed to be containing the original fire, but that had gotten out of hand. Having his hands full with Leo, he'd had to abandon his sphere, which, to this day, was stiff in one place and could never quite become transparent. Anyway, the fire had provided an excuse for us finally to do something we'd been talking about forever, namely to plant it in clover and other flowering plants and keep bees. When there was an economy extramuros, we could sell the honey to burghers in the market stall before the day gate and use the money to buy things that were difficult to make inside the consent. When conditions outside were post-apocalyptic, we could eat it. As I jogged toward the Minster, the stone wall was to my right. The tangles, now just as full and ripe as they'd been during the fire, were mostly behind me and to my left. In front of me, and somewhat uphill, were the 7 stairs, crowded with avout. Compared to the other Fras, all swathed in their bolts, half-naked Leo, moving twice as fast, was like an ant of the wrong color. The chancel, the heart of the Minster, had an octagonal floor plan. As Theors were more apt to put it, had the symmetry group of the 8 roots of unity. Its 8 walls were dense traceries, some of stone, others of carved wood. We called them screens, a word confusing to extramuros people for whom a screen was something on which you'd watch a spiele or play a game. For us, a screen was a wall with lots of holes in it, a barrier through which you could see, hear, and smell. four great naves were flung out, northeast, southwest, from the base of the minster. If you have ever attended a wedding or a funeral in one of the Diolater's arcs, a nave would remind you of the big part where the guests sit, stand, kneel, flog themselves, roll on the floor, or whatever it is that they do. The chancel, then, would correspond to the place where the priest stands at the altar. When you see the minster from a distance, it's the four naves that make it so broad at its base. Guests from Extramuros, like Artisan Fleck, were allowed to come in the day gate and view aughts from the north nave when they were not especially contagious and, by and large, behaving themselves. This had been more or less the case for the last century and a half. If you visited Arconsent by coming in through the day gate, you'd be channeled into the portal in the north facade and walk up the center aisle of the north nave toward the screen at the end. You might be forgiven for thinking that the whole minster consisted of only that nave and the octagonal space on the other side of the screen. But someone in the east, west, or south nave would make the same mistake. The screens were made dark on the nave side and light on the chancel side, so that it was easy to see into the chancel but impossible to see beyond it, creating the illusion that each nave stood alone and owned the chancel